Thank you, Marion. Distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. I did mention to Marion, and I do want to apologise if my talk today is slightly disjointed, because I wasn't sure what would be left for me to say after the previous two speakers. So I'll work through this. First thing I want to say is I fully support the minister's initiative in this regard, and I have two reasons for doing that. One is I'm heartily sick of all the speculation about amalgamations that was dominating every local government meeting that I went to. So finally we've actually ended the period of speculation. I don't have to spend an hour at every function talking about what would happen if the government brought in amalgamations, because now we know. And the second reason I support it is that it's given an impetus to the process of reform. Now, to be fair, and I think we should all acknowledge this, this process was begun by Wagga, and it is heartily backed by Wagga, but it's been a very slow process. The writing of the report has been going on for years, and the implementation of the findings of the report was probably going to take decades. Hopefully, as a result of the government becoming involved, we're going to shorten that time frame. I mean, to be fair to Bill and Wagga, they were moving as fast as they could, but in my view, it's like dragging a donkey by the nose. Now we're going to get some action. And I can give you a concrete example of that. When I became mayor recently, and I've only been involved in local government a short time, I had a look at our map and I saw that our boundaries didn't actually make a lot of sense. So I thought, well, first thing I'm going to do is talk to our neighbouring councils and get our boundaries realigned so they're more sensible. And then I thought, yeah, actually, that'd be a complete waste of time. That's another year of my life gone, going nowhere. So basically, I shelved that idea. But as a result of this process, we're now engaged in negotiation with all our surrounding councils, and we've actually agreed in principle, without final approval, but we've agreed in principle certain boundary realignments, which are smaller themselves but are just common sense and could not have happened other than in this kind of atmosphere that we have at the moment. The other thing I'd say about the Triple S report is it's based on regional councils. And my council, the Town of Cambridge, is involved with three regional councils. That's 12 councils altogether, or 13 including us. So we probably have more exposure to regional councils than any other council in this state. And I don't like regional councils. In fact, I'd like to see them outlawed. And I certainly don't think they're a vehicle for reforming local government. They're a fourth layer of government. They don't eliminate overheads. They create a new layer of overhead. And there are very serious governance issues with regional councils. The most important and serious issue is they're not accountable to anybody. And that's an issue that needs to be addressed. But I think we're better off going in a different direction. They're, in my view, they're the worst form of government. They're not a basis for reform of local government. Now, some of the speakers today have mentioned sustainability, and I just want to say a few things about sustainability. The reviews that have come out on sustainability have focused mainly on country councils. In fact, I think one of the reports identified one or maybe two city councils that regarded as not being sustainable. The rest are in the country. And one of those two happened to be my own council, which I found absolutely hilarious, because whoever did the study obviously knew nothing about accounting. And that's part of the problem with adjudicating sustainability is local government accounting is a world of its own. I mean, most of our assets are in our balance sheets are roads and footpaths, which are actually worth nothing. And in the case of my own council, we have interest in various development properties which are worth probably more than $100 million, not appearing on our balance sheet. So for some peanut in an ivory tower to come along and say our council's not sustainable, I think reflects very badly on these analyses. The other thing that's often ignored is that councils have rating power. So if you're not raising enough income to cover your costs, put up rates. Put up rates by more than you wanted to. I mean, very few councils are unsustainable other than some kind of contrived definition that has been adopted by academics to do the survey. This doesn't apply to the very small councils, though, I think. Where you have councils of 300 ratepayers. I mean, everyone talks about population, but we don't actually talk about ratepayers. Some of these wheat belt councils only have a small number of ratepayers. There are larger, fewer farms in the wheat belt. There's a declining population, and the cost burden is falling on fewer and fewer people. And you cannot keep taxing those people to maintain council staffs where, you know, you might have 300 ratepayers paying for 10 people in the council. If you extrapolated that across urban councils, you'd come up with a very large cost bill. Having said that, I think we also need to recognise that there are not many cost savings to come out of amalgamation. Having been in mergers and acquisitions my entire life, the first thing I did when I became mayor was look around and sort of said, well, who can we buy? Or who can we amalgamate with? I mean, reverse takeover of Sterling seemed very attractive at one point in time. But unfortunately, that kind of financial engineering is not available to local governments. But when I had a look at where our costs were going, there wasn't actually a lot of area for cost savings. And this is something we need to bear in mind, that things like road maintenance are put out to contract, put out to tender, and they're the same cost pretty much for large councils and small councils. Things like your pool and your library, the cost doesn't change on the size of council. Waste collection, again, is put out to tender. It's, dollar per bin lift. Waste processing is based on tonnage. Park maintenance is the same. You need the same number of guys on a lawnmower. You need the same amount of water. You need the same amount of rangers. So it doesn't matter whether your population's four times as big or half the size. You don't actually save costs because you still need the same facilities and they're still costing the same. And mergers can be very expensive. So we need to bear in mind when we're looking at this, that the cost of mergers is astronomical. I can't work out quite how expensive they are. But the financial returns are actually very, very low, perhaps maybe non-existent. I think the minister probably hit the nail on the head when he said what we're talking about is the enhanced capacity for delivery of community services. But it's not financial gains, I think, on the whole, that will come out of amalgamations. And the minister also mentioned that this was part, the amalgamations was part of a bigger reform package, and I'd just like to conclude by adding a few things of my own to that reform list, which are not on there. The first is, I think local government has to deal with this issue of conflict of interest. At the moment, we have this idea that if you have a conflict, you can walk out of the room, the vote's taken, you come back, no problem. Well, personally, I find that unacceptable. I think there has to be complete prohibition on councillors and the related people doing business with that council. So either so on the council, their company, their wife, their uncle, no one related to them can do business with the council. They want to do that off the council. Should be a clear, hard and fast rule. This antiquated idea that you weren't in the room and the vote was taken, so it's okay, I think it's ridiculous. We've got to raise the bar on that item. Second item is I think there should be maximum terms for councillors. Maximum three terms would be 12 years. I think that is more than enough. The corporate world is going that way. It's acknowledged that people don't have a lot to offer after doing 10 years on a board. I think local government should go the same way. We should flush out the dead wood, create opportunities for new candidates. And finally, and this is not necessarily within the Department of Local Government, but it's an issue that affects local government, the control of waste management needs to be removed from local government, put in the hands of a central waste authority. Waste managers got far beyond the competency of local government, and in my view, there's a train wreck coming in waste management in this state. In the old days, waste management involved your local tip, which was a quarry, a former quarry, and what happened was I remember when I was a kid, you'd go to the local tip, there's a bloke in a singlet sitting in a recycled deck chair having a cigarette by the gate. He said, I've got some rubbish to take to the tip. He says, in the hole over there, mate. And at that level of infrastructure, councils were doing, was fully in the competency of councils. But these days, waste management is much more pressing. We have a number of alternate technologies, which are not easy to understand. We have a number of alternative strategies, generally, for waste. We have complex business models for running waste centres. New plant requires very complex financings, and it's all documented in voluminous legal agreement. They're overseen by councillors with no expertise in any of these things. Basically, it's a mess, in my view. A recipe for disaster, and if something is not done, there will be a train wreck in waste management in the next 10 years. I think I'll leave it at that. That's enough of my list, and throw it open to questions. Thank you.